I have watched network security evolve from stateful perimeter firewalls, maybe some IDS, IPS thrown in, to this complex stack delivered as several unique tools. It feels like every new security scare would result in a new and specialized tool. And the tools don't talk to each other very often, and knowledge kind of becomes fractured among SecOps team specialists who could or can't work a particular tool. And it's kind of annoying, but we need all these tools. They're really sticky because we need them for our business. And this is a common situation today, right? You got a pile of security vendors. They probably don't talk to each other. There's not a unified security policy, and technical knowledge is scattered across the team. And maybe you got a platform that attempts to centralize all your SecOps stuff, right? We're used to this paradigm, but increasingly there are alternatives. Welcome to Heavy Networking. I am Ethan Banks with Drew Conroy Murray, and you can follow us on LinkedIn, BlueSky, and the Packet Pushers Community Slack group. And our guest today is Rich Campagna. Rich has been in cybersecurity for about 2 decades, and he's currently a senior vice president at Palo Alto Networks, our sponsor today. So, Rich, I want us to have a conversation with you that gets into the way we've been doing security operations versus maybe how we should be thinking about it today. And one of the things I want to tackle here right at the top is the prevailing security wisdom, at least it used to be, of quote unquote best of breed. And for a lot of years, me as a security engineer, I was needing to buy tools that were quote unquote the best in a particular category for some definition of best, because the logic is, well, there's strength in a diversity of vendors and so on. And I in fairness, I don't know that we hear about best of breed as much anymore. And there's some different ways to think about it. So what's changing in the minds of security practitioners?
Well, maybe let's start by addressing the elephant in the room, Ethan, which is me. I don't know if you've ever looked at my LinkedIn profile before, but in those 2 decades of cybersecurity experience, I've actually been at right in the middle of developing some of those, many of those best of breed types of solutions, right? I've worked in cloud security, I've worked in mobile security, all kinds of different network security related
You're saying I
products.
probably bought products that are your fault on some level.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure that you have. Even going as far back as SSL VPNs, which for those in your audience that aren't old enough to remember, I suspect maybe you are. Those are like the great great granddaddy of ZTNA and SASE solutions, right? So, for the entirety of my career, for the most part, this is what I've been doing is working with teams that have looked at a new trend and then developed some sort of best of breed solution to react to that trend to help the enterprise solve the problem. And this is how it's been in cybersecurity for at least the last 20 years. The challenge is that over time, there's just more and more of these use cases. And these use cases come from two areas. One, the business is adapting, right? I actually happened to have a discussion with a room full of high school students this morning, and I was kind of recapping some of my cybersecurity journey for them, since they're kind of early on and they're deciding what they want to do with their career. And I would talked a little bit about when the iPhone first came out, right? We adapted and we built a set of solutions for mobile devices way back when. That's like 20 years ago now, if you can believe that. Then cloud came along. We built a set of solutions there that are kind of cloud specific. And now what's happening? There's all these investments in AI that are happening across the enterprise, and even more tools coming to market. And the challenge is that over time, the number of tools has just sort of started to stack up and become greater and greater, a bigger and bigger set of best of breed. If all you had to secure was basic internet access for employees and maybe remote access with some sort of VPN type of solution, that's just okay, that's relatively contained. But now you have a much broader attack surface because all these new applications come in, deployed in all these different ways. Not to mention the fact that attackers on the other side have also expanded their set of techniques, as that every time that enterprise attack surface increases, the set of attack techniques also increases as well. And so what we're left with, Ethan, is 83 security solutions, right? That is the average number of solutions that we see across our customer base. And we asked them. So we went out and said,
Wait,
hey,
wait, 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 wait. 83 security tools that have been bought and are implemented in theory at a particular customer site?
correct, on average from about 29 different vendors. So
It's gotten worse.
think about your kitchen, right? Think about the spice rack in your kitchen, right? And how complicated that is, right? You're trying to make something and you want to get some, I don't know, rosemary or thyme. Unless you have the label maker and you put the label on top, every time I open that thing, I'm looking for, I can't find the rosemary, I can't find the thyme. I got four or five different types of salt. Where did they? I have kosher salt, sea salt, fine grain sea salt, the pink
Himalayan
Himalayan
salt.
salt,
Yeah, gotta
which
get
my
yeah.
favorite, by
Himalayan
the
pink
way, is the
salt. There
pink
you go.
Himalayan. It's always from the Himalayas. There's nowhere else you can get pink salt. But this is, you're going to cook something, and it is, you have these 83 different spices in your spice rack, and selecting the right ones, putting them together into the, I mean, it becomes very complicated. And that's the same thing that's happening in cybersecurity, is that yes, these best of breed products, they all have a specific job that the customer is hiring them to do, but there's just become so many of them that stitching together, especially in light of the fact that attack techniques are typically multifaceted, using multiple different types of attempts at getting into an organization, it's become complicated. So I am the cause of the problem. Hopefully I can provide some sort of contribution to solving the problem, but it really amounts to complexity.
So I think one of the products that emerged out of that complexity was the notion of a Security Information and Event Manager, or SIEM, and then SOAR, Security Orchestration Automation and Response, where the idea is, okay, we've got all kinds of logs and alerts and stuff coming from a bunch of different systems. Let's throw them in a pile, try to unify it, maybe put some logic around it to ask it questions or get it to do things. What is your take on that as sort of a way to address the security sprawl issue?
If I zoom out from that to more generically security operations is a core function that needs to happen inside of an organization. And something like a SIEM, and there's strengths and weaknesses of each of the different kind of SIEM platforms out there, but something like that is a core platform that does a lot of different jobs for that security operations team. Now, some of them are better at automating and building efficiencies I mean, every organization you ever talk to on the planet, they don't have enough SOC analysts, of course, right? And so you want to focus more and more on automation. You want to stitch more things together. But Drew, the SIEM is a fundamentally, exactly what we're talking about here. It's this primary integration point where you're stitching a lot of stuff together. So yes, it is absolutely a key part of simplification inside of an organization. And what does it solve? I mean,
Well,
for
anybody
starters.
who's actually operated a SIEM is not going to use the word simple, but.
So I heard this. I won't call out the specific SIEM vendor, but a couple years ago, I was at a trade show listening to a talk, and a SIEM vendor had one of their customers come up on the stage, talking about their experience with this particular product. And what the customer said sticks in my mind to this day. The customer said, "This is not a solution; it's a platform on which you can build a solution," right? And well, there's no way the marketing folks at that SIEM vendor, we're probably rolling over, that's the last thing you want a
Somebody's getting
customer
out
to
the big
say is
hook to pull him off the stage.
that. Yeah, exactly. But so you're right, Drew. I mean, but just because a product has, most of the products in a category have been built in a complicated fashion that require a lot of tweaking and tuning, doesn't mean that the fundamental premises of, taking information from some of these disparate, point best of breed products, as we've been talking them, into a single place where you can consolidate all that visibility and then drive some automation to get towards the right outcomes, doesn't mean that's not the right underlying premises. What it means is that underlying premises of that kind of comprehensive platform has not been executed upon in the right fashion. But still the underlying idea is sound.
So you said something, and I want to drill into that just a little bit. You said security operations, and for a long time, we talked about security, and now we're starting to talk about security operations. Security was sort of about writing some firewall rules, looking at some logs, maybe checking the IDS once in a while, and then now it's like a function that sprawls across a variety of tools and categories. But also, you have to interface with other, IT teams, business teams, and so on. That it is more of an operation as opposed to sort of a discrete task or function.
I think you're absolutely right. When I say security operation, what I guess I'm typically referring to is sort of the definition the industry has adopted, which is more sort of like incident response and analysis type of
Okay.
security operations. You have your proactive, measures, which are things like the firewalls that we, you know, we develop and sell to our customers, or, you know, data loss prevention, or some of the new stuff, you know, out there around, you know, protecting AI applications. All this kind of stuff is sort of, you know, it's proactive. They're things that you put in place with a set of rules. Of course, there's operations around how you, you know, operate those things. And this is another where of that, you know, place where this platformization effort comes in and consolidating, you know, the management and operations administration of those tools. But then when I was talking about security operations before, it's more the people using the SIEM and some of these other tools where they're doing some of the, you know, instant response and analysis and trying to figure out what actually has happened, more of a reactive type of function. But both are absolutely critical aspects of the operations of security. But there's perhaps we need a different term for one of them.
Right.
Okay, Rich, you're with Palo Alto Networks. You have a point of view, right? We yeah. understand that. But one of the things we're hearing from Palo Alto Networks and from other security vendors is, look, guys, you want to put all your eggs into our basket. You want a single vendor security solution at this point. All right. Make the case for that, Rich, that it's not best of breed. It's not a third party SIEM SOAR solution. It's I should be looking to more or less single source my security function to a single vendor. Can you make that case?
Well, let me start by challenging one of the things you just said, which is that it's not best of breed.
Okay.
I had a customer say to me the other day, and this, you know, really, really drove the point home. Efficacy is absolutely number one, right? And obviously this depends on the use case, but if you do not have a solution, if you put in place a solution that it's trying to guard a specific, you know, let's say part of your application infrastructure, some of your data against a specific type of an attack, and it's, you know, 60% effective against stopping that type of attack, and you're getting attacked millions of times per day, even if it's integrated into a platform, you should absolutely not buy that, right? Even if it's one of our products, you should absolutely, you still need to have the absolute best in terms of efficacy. But what we see—
You said it's not best of breed. So what are you saying?
Well, you can have best of breed for a particular, let's say, I don't know, malware scanning built into a platform, right? But you still need to hold that. You need to maintain that high bar, right? You can, yeah. You know, the point is that you can't have a solution. Let's say part of what we do is malware scanning in our network security products, right? If we are 60% effective at finding and preventing malware from getting into your organization, you should absolutely not buy that part of the platform.
Right.
That's my point. So you still have to hold the high bar in terms of efficacy. And so maybe it's the term best of breed that I was responding to, right? It can be best of breed and still part of a platform. What it's not is it's not a point product that's deployed on its own with a whole new project, you know, infrastructure project and all the different moving parts of deploying that product. It's an extension of an existing platform.
So the broken thinking is in where we're at in security operations right now is the challenge of integrating the data and telemetry we're getting from different tools together. So if we have, am I making your argument for me? I don't know, but is the argument that if all the tools are under a common vendor umbrella, it is easier for me to get that data shared amongst the tools and get the efficacy, get the defense I'm looking for because all those tools are working together?
Yes, but I'm going to add to that as well. The other critical component, and this is part of, you know, one of our findings with working with our customers, and this is actually shared by a number of kind of key industry analysts as well. The vast majority, upwards of 99% of security incidents are actually, they're not the result of a weakness in a control, or, you know, like something like a lack of efficacy. They're not the result of a, you know, a control not being in place. They're the result of a misconfiguration of a control. Huh. The products are not being used properly, one, because they're complex, but two, because you have one person or one small team responsible for, you know, a large number of these 83 controls that the organization on average has in place. And so that's the added point. It's that we're actually this best of breed. It may be the best of breed. It maybe it's better than whatever it is we're talking about is better than what's built into a platform in some way, somehow superior. But because you need to integrate it all together to get the visibility that you talked about, you need to have somebody, you know, people on staff that are experts in this particular tool and know how to tune it and tweak it and to get the right outcome that they're after. What ends up happening is there's just so much complexity in the environment that mistakes get made, not for lack of trying, just for lack of time. And this is where the breakdown happens. It's that it's just too much for the average organization to kind of, you know, kind of keep together, stitching together visibility, but importantly, getting all these tools to be working properly.
The tool would have saved us, but we weren't able to leverage it properly due to all the things you just said, complexity, time, training, et cetera.
Yeah, let me give you an example, Ethan. Like I see all the time customers with like a large organization, 1,000+ firewalls deployed across, you know, in their, you know, cloud firewalls in their cloud environments, hardware firewalls or, you know, virtualized firewalls in their data centers, maybe some smaller firewalls in their branch locations, right? Huge, these huge, you know, kind of firewall states protecting all the perimeter of an organization. But it's not uncommon for us to understand at some point that, you know, there was some gap in configuration at some point. Somebody's copying and pasting a, you know, Terraform or something, and something got missed. And, you know, some set of security services, maybe that malware protection we talked about before, never got applied to some huge portion of that firewall state for that particular organization. Or perhaps a bit more nuanced, if you want to scan a file for malware, you need to actually decrypt a session. Right, you need to terminate the session in the network security enforcement point, decrypt it, you know, buffer the file, scan it, and then re-encrypt it on the back end. Well, the ability to scan for malware, whether it's, you know, individual packets or file streaming, as in that particular example, is severely limited if you're not decrypting. And so a lot of customers will end up, you know, they'll start on decryption and maybe do it only for a small, so, you know, for a small subset of their overall traffic flows or destination. So these kind of things happen, which are, you know, it's just somebody got busy and it just never happened, or there's a copy and paste error on a template. And, you know, identifying, I mean, when you have 83 different security solutions, you know, understanding that, chasing those things down, you know, checking off the checkbox on the task list, some of these things just get missed. And unfortunately, those are the types of things that cause the incidents that we talked about.
So getting back to that security operations conversation, then it sounds like it's less about best of breed versus platform. There is still a case to be made for, I need the most efficacious product in my environment, whether it's part of a platform or not. But regardless of the efficacy of a platform, if my SecOps isn't always up to snuff or there's just human error or whatever, I can still introduce vulnerabilities into my organization because of a misconfiguration or some other reason.
Right. Efficacy is number one. But what I'm advocating for is that simplicity is number two.
So the big question then is, how do we get to simplicity when the average organization has 83 tools?
Or are you implying that if I'm under a single vendor platform, that it is simpler inherently, because in theory, if it's well designed, my 83 different solutions are actually integrated into a platform, and so it should be easier to I won't make as many mistakes deploying policy. I'm not going to miss a bunch of firewalls and not get the malware discovery and defense in place.
Yeah, it's absolutely that. It's, you know, when you're investing into a, let's do a quick example, right? Let's say, I know we're going to talk about AI in the next portion of the show here, but I'm going to jump the gun, right? The CEO comes to the organization. I'm sorry, this is your podcast, not mine. Is that against the rules?
Go ahead.
Do what you want, man. Go.
All right.
AI has entered the chat.
CEO of an organization comes, you know, top down, says, hey, you know what? We're investing in this new Gen AI tool because it's going to help us, you know, create a new revenue stream or maybe drive a lot of costs out of our customer support. And by the way, we need this done ASAP, right? When you do that, and by the way, I'm not going to preempt that whole, the whole next, what I think is the next part of the discussion, but when you do that, you have a choice. You can go and buy from any number of new startups out there that are just focused on this AI problem, right? And so you need some sort of, let's say, real-time control in front of that application and the model or models that it's drawing from. And so you're going to deploy something into the network, some sort of AI firewall type of technology. So what do you have to do there? One, you're now putting something in line in the network, which introduces some risk, but security team needs to talk to, most of the stuff is getting deployed in the cloud. So they need to talk to the cloud team and allow the cloud team to get them access to, you know, the cloud infrastructure. So at the very least, they can start some discovery and understand where these models and other assets are, et cetera. So that's one, you know, one interface point. Then, you know, whether it's the cloud team or some sort of networking team, you need to steer traffic to this thing from, let's say the models just use a generic term, into the into whatever this real-time control is. So that's another piece. And then, you know, the next thing is you need to, you know, provide access to this tool. So your privileged users, so you're tying into some like PAM type of tool, like a CyberArk or something. So privileged users can come in and make changes as new applications get deployed. You have to tie into your identity system. So it ties into multi-factor authentication. And not to mention the fact that once you've done all this, you still have fundamentally an application that is subject not only to new AI specific threats, but also subject to the same old cross-site scripting and SQL injection attacks. So you still need a firewall anyway. So what you've done now is you've introduced all this complexity with not only technology, but with people. You have, you know, two sets of inline controls protecting a particular application. And you've pulled out a lot of your hair in the process because the security people never want to talk to the networking people and they never want to talk to the identity people and whatever the case may be. It's just like internal politics always rears its ugly head. So this is maybe like a example of, you know, what's going to happen when the business comes and has a new need and you want to react to it and you bring in one of these best of breed, but specifically point products. It's a massive new cross-organizational project. And I, by the way, of course, I oversimplified that project. It's far more complicated than that to begin with. So,
okay. You brought up AI. I do want to get into that because I actually have a tab open in my browser right now for Hugging Face. I'm looking at a whole bunch of different models. I can download something locally, feed it into a tool, an open source tool that I downloaded, and it will update the output I get from that as I send in different queries. What is different from a security perspective about me doing that or building an application using any one of these models? Honestly, I just got into the whole Hugging Face thing. Surprised at how many models are out there. There's a ton of them from all
different countries. They're over a million now, right? Like 1.2 million or something?
I have no idea.
Crazy.
Beyond, I mean, just even if you just look at the popular ones, the really big ones that you've maybe heard of, the parent company that put this thing out there, I'm just astonished at how many different models are out there with their different levels of expertise and specialties and so on. But what's different about me downloading a model, building an app around it, then that requires some new defense. Like you were talking about, oh, I got to get in there. Maybe there's point solutions out there about this now. Why? What is unique here?
Well, maybe a couple of things. One, first of all, let me start by saying that I think, you know, what Hugging Face is doing with, you know, kind of open source, you know, for AI is fantastic. It's not just models out there. There's a huge number of data sets as well, which of course is one of the big inhibitors to training and fine tuning models. But there's a couple of challenges, surmountable challenges, but challenges, right? In that example I gave before, developers are being pushed to move very quickly. So if I'm on a development team and I'm trying to move quickly because the CEO is like, we need to deliver this, you know, new AI powered application in the next 12 weeks or whatever, you know, whatever the crazy timeline is. There's a couple of things I can do. One, I can go to our cloud service provider and they have either their own models or like a walled garden, you know, kind of set of pre-vetted models that may have like Llama from Meta and may have like Claude from Anthropic, some of these really well-known models. And then you build and develop everything on those foundation models and you fine tune them yourselves. And, you know, that takes some time though. Or I go to a place like Hugging Face and I find something that's already, maybe it's based on a foundation model, which I think what you were referring to, Ethan, like Llama example. Yeah. But it's already fine tuned to my specific use case. So not too long ago, I was giving a talk to a bunch of healthcare CISOs. And so one of the things I did is exactly what you just described, Ethan. I went on Hugging Face and I said, I'm going to pretend I'm a healthcare developer. I'm trying to come up with this chat bot for discussions between the patients and the clinical staff. So I'm going to find a fine-tuned model. So I forget exactly what I searched for, something healthcare related, and I found a fine-tuned version of Llama, specifically fine-tuned for, you know, some of these discussions with, you know, between physicians and their patients. And what I found was that that version of Llama was trained basically on a set of transcripts, a couple hundred thousand transcripts of patient and doctor discussions. Patient would describe their symptom. doctor would respond, "Don't worry, guys, I looked and I didn't see either of your names in the potentially exposed PII."
That was my next question. Hopefully this is anonymized data, right?
Your secrets are safe. Your secrets are safe here. But this is the kind of thing I may do as a developer. I'm going to go, and in this particular case, okay, the foundation model itself is well known. It's been vetted. It's used by a lot of organizations. It's vetted by all the major CSPs to get into their walled gardens. But now I'm taking something it's got this additional input of this questionable data set, may have PII or worse. It could have some sort of malicious content, in it. I don't know. But I'm doing this because now I have something that I can work with today. That's kind of already tuned for this application I'm trying to build, instead of taking the time and even trying to find the data sets to start that with. And so that's, kind of starting point is I'm trying to cut corners and move very quickly because the CEO is telling me to do so because it's going to transform the business. But there's some questionable provenance now of maybe even the model itself, but certainly of the data set. And so, when this comes in, what are the risks? Well, some patient is going to be interacting with this thing. It's going to be intervening on the doctor's behalf. Patient's going to describe their systems. Maybe, my protected health information comes back, which is a reputational impact. It's a HIPAA violation, even if it's not that organization's own, protected health information. But maybe worse, right? Maybe there's some compromise either in the data set and the model itself, and that stuff has not been vetted. And so, you want to start by looking at the model that you're bringing in, making sure you're doing the right set of scanning, make sure that it's hardened against things like, the various different AI specific techniques. And then of course, you need some sort of components in place that are gonna, attackers, they know that this stuff is brand new. They're not stupid, right? They know that you've been hardening these other applications for the last 10, 15 years, but this stuff is all rushed to market. And so they're going after it and they're developing more. I think last time I came on the show, there was like 6 or 7 different categories of prompt injection techniques that we were kind of tracking. Now that's up over 25. And it's only been a few months since, since I've been on this show last, right? And so this stuff is evolving very quickly. Attackers are going after it, looking to find those weaknesses, something that's rushed to market. Not to mention the fact that you may have some sort of model or data set compromise. These are all the kinds of challenges, but it's really fundamentally, all of this stuff is new in the last couple of years, which means it hasn't been vetted through, all the other organizations hitting the pain with regards to their own internal pen testing or red teaming. It hasn't hit, really been validated against actual live attackers in production environments. And stuff is getting pulled in and attackers are looking for those weaknesses.
So this is, I guess, how we get to the, I had 83 tools. Now you've just described the scenario. So now I need 84 because I have to go get essentially a prompt injection firewall.
Exactly. Yeah. 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 This is exactly where the complexity continues to grow. And as I mentioned before, maybe it wasn't so clear, I still need to protect that application that's front-ending that LLM against all the traditional types of attacks. So it's not like this prompt injection firewall, as you put it, Drew, is taking the place of the existing firewall. It's additive.
Right. But at least hopefully you've got other tools in place for, the cross site scripting, the SQL injection, the web app stuff that you also have to worry about. But you are opening up also potentially a new category of attack that probably some startup is going to address, which is why I get to tool 84.
Exactly. Yeah. Tool 84. And then next week it'll be tool 85.
Right.
I don't know what that one is yet, but it will come.
I'm going to ask you, is tool 85 something to do with agentic AI? That seems to be the next paradigm of AI that everyone's excited about. There's talk about MCP, Model Context Protocol, about how the different agents are going to communicate with one another, and MCP seeming like an abstraction layer that makes that easier. Is this tool 85?
Yeah. I mean, assuming you're not investing in a set of platforms that shrink our 83, 84, 85 to a much smaller number, then yes, absolutely. This is, I guarantee you, in fact, I know a handful off the top of my head, there's startups out there going specifically after the agentic AI security problem, right? All the startups from the last couple of years that went after just traditional AI application, generative AI security are yesterday's business. Now it's the new stuff coming after agentic, which really fundamentally, yeah, there's some new components to agent. It just really what agentic applications do is it increases the complexity of the deployment. You still have you know, at the base LLMs, but a lot of these agents are talking to your SaaS applications, other types of services, because they're taking action on your behalf. Maybe they're interacting, you know, in real time with, you know, internet facing assets. So there's a lot more attack surface that comes with telling an agent to find me the right itinerary for the next for my family vacation to Costa Rica, and book me the flight and the Airbnb and the rental car. There's a lot more complexity and interaction with more services and applications there than help me develop, which is last year's, you know, chatbot kind of application, help me develop an itinerary for my trip to Costa Rica and recommend some flights to me, right? One of those is like simple web search, or maybe, you know, searching your travel site, you know, for inventory of flights and the like. The other one is actually going and taking action on your behalf. So there's a lot more risk associated there and a lot more moving parts and actually completing those actions, as opposed to proposing what you might do to complete those actions on your own.
So I guess I'm hearing you describe this, I'm thinking, okay, it sounds new, but to me, we're still dealing with some of the same issues we've been grappling with forever, which is authorization, authentication, and access control. Is this agent who it says it is? What access levels does it have? And how can I make sure it's only doing what it needs to be done? We have those controls. We've had those controls forever. Is it simply a case of sort of shifting it over to it, to this model, or do we need something entirely new here?
Well, I think, Drew, that you're kind of inadvertently making my argument, just like I think Ethan did earlier in the session, which is, you know, this is, you know, we shouldn't need to do a truck roll, you know, cross organizational massive infrastructure project every time there's a new use case. A lot of these are, yes, they're absolutely, of course, there are new techniques that attackers are using them. So it's not like there's not new innovation required. But what is similar is, you know, these sets of control points across your organization where you're trying to, you know, keep the attackers at bay and protect data, right? You already have a lot of that stuff deployed in a typical enterprise. It's a new sets of techniques. And so a lot of, you know, kind of the platformization, the promise of platformization is not only are we reducing complexity, but when there's a new demand from your business, like we want to build these AI-powered applications and we need to roll them out, you shouldn't have to do a massive new deployment. Maybe it's an extension of capabilities of an existing platform that you've already deployed. And so that's exactly it. You know, I think you hit the nail on the head, Drew. They're new techniques, new applications techniques, new verbiage and language, of course, you know, which the tech industry loves to introduce every couple of years. Uh-huh. But it's still fundamentally at the core, there's a set of attackers on the outside, maybe sitting right next to your customers. And there's a set of assets they're trying to get access to. You need to provide access to the customers and not to the attackers. I mean, at a million foot level, that's essentially what's happening. Of course, there's more nuance and complexity to that, but that's kind of the idea. It's, can we support that without a massive infrastructure project every time there's a new use case?
I'm curious, Rich, if you're aware of whether, you know, as we set up this sort of agentic environment, if they're going to adopt something like a digital certificate infrastructure we see with websites for things like authentication and encryption? Or are they coming up with something new and more complicated? And
good question, Drew. Let me just generically say, use the term machine identity, right? Or service identity. Mm-hmm. They're increasingly, all of these assets, they all have permissions, of course. They all have some underlying identity, and associated with that identity are those permissions and controls and guardrails around what they should be doing and what they should not be doing. I think the industry as a whole has made a lot of really, you know, fantastic progress towards you know, handling identity on the user side. And my dream, my hope, is that one day I will no longer have a password for anything. We are very slowly. I have two dreams in my life. I'm a very simple man. One, I don't want to have any more passwords ever again. And two, I don't want to carry a car key. Unfortunately, I drive a pickup truck, and there's not a good solution that doesn't have, you know, a mobile app for the Tacoma doesn't have this solution. So I can't, you know, solve that one today. But anyway, I think we've done a good job in progressing towards, you know, identity should be the fundamental concept, you know, governing all human access into these various different systems. You know, machines, to use a generic term, all these different assets, which have their own identities as well, I think we need to do a better job as well. So whether that's with certificates, Drew, or, you know, some other sorts of concept, you know, oftentimes In the cloud world, we use something like tags as sort of a proxy. Maybe it's a weak proxy for some form of asset identity, but at least it's a starting point. Is it as strong as certificates? No, but it's a fundamental notion that's been widely deployed in cloud and even, private cloud types of deployments. And so a lot of people are, using that kind of concept. It needs more evolution though.
Okay, but at least there's sort of an identity for me to start at least building basic policies around.
Right, exactly.
You were talking about platformization. That is, if I as a security vendor am delivering a platform as new attack vectors come up, new things that need to be defended against, you've got the platform, and rather than buying a point solution, you just look to your platformed security vendor to deliver a new capability on your existing platform. Okay. How do you respond to the person who says, yeah, but shouldn't I spread out my risk by using more than one vendor? I don't want everything tied up in a platform from a vendor. There's strength, there's risk I'm spreading out if I'm using more than one vendor. Is that still a valid way to think about anything?
Well, is there? Are you really spreading the risk, Ethan? Think about this.
The argument though, Rich, right? Because that.
Oh, I know
that
the
is...
argument. I hear it all the time. But here's what I'd say to that. Okay, but in the firewall space, where Palo Alto Networks, my employer, obviously plays, I hear this question all the time. Well, we should have one set of firewall services for solutions for our data center and a different set for our branches. Well, have you really spread? I mean, if you really want to guard against the risk of some sort of catastrophic failure or something along those lines, or some gap, what you're going to do is you're going to deploy the Palo Alto Networks firewall with another firewall right behind it for all of those. That's the way you mitigate risk, but it's incredibly costly, incredibly complex. It has performance. Nobody does that, right? So are you really, if a data center firewall goes down, and you have a different vendor in your branch locations, what have you really, you've introduced complexity as a customer. You have decreased your bargaining power with the vendor, whether it's Palo Alto Networks or some other organization, or you've done that, but have you really mitigated some sort of risk of having a single point of failure? You haven't, right? You've got twice as many vendors to deal with. Twice as many customer support organizations. You got to negotiate more contracts. You have to have people on staff that know all the nuances of these. We already talked about the downsides of complexity and how it leads to most security incidents. So I don't know. I think I'm not sure I see it the same way. I do hear that question all the time, of course, but mitigating risk to me would mean I'm going to put two firewalls, one after the next, in front of my data center because I want to guard against some sort of miss in the security efficacy or some sort of catastrophic failure. But nobody's actually doing that. You wouldn't do it.
I wouldn't want to add that much latency into the mix, for sure. And I also wouldn't do the one solution at a branch, another solution at the core, kind of a thing, because of the management challenge. No, I wouldn't do that either. But I might do something like firewall from one vendor, IDS, IPS from another vendor, maybe something like that. But again, going back to your earlier argument, you're saying with platformization, you build in all the capabilities. Now you've got uniformity of security policy that is guarding against the configuration or the misconfiguration problem, I guess.
It's also helping you with that visibility if and when there is an incident. Now you have one single set of logs and reporting and visibility, whether that's out of the native console or to Drew's earlier point, out of the some sort of SIM, all that stuff is aggregated together. You're trying to chase down an incident. You don't have to have your SOC analyst go log into the firewall, identify this log into the IPS. So that, that's another part of it as well. It's just, in the reactive. So Ethan, you just spoke to the proactive piece of it, which is far more simple with a single solution. It's also more simple on the reactive side as well, especially because attackers increasingly are using, a sequence of the techniques as opposed to just a single technique, right? They get in, then they, get some sort of privilege, then they move laterally. Mm-hmm. And this is all, tied up into either one source of visibility in a platform or multiple different products. And someone's got to stitch that stuff together. We didn't even talk about response time. So when we went and talked to our customers are on average, it takes 72 fewer days to detect an incident if they have invested in the entirety of the Palo Alto Networks network security platform, as opposed to just buying parts of our platform and then investing elsewhere. So even the response itself is much more quickly when everything is tied together.
So we have been talking about AI as a risk. What about AI as a tool to help? We're hearing lots of people talk about, you know, especially in the platform argument, you know, buy into our platform. We've got all this data. We can throw machine learning on top of it and help you with, you know, threat hunting, threat detection, response. We can give you a co-pilot where you can ask it questions and so on. How real is all that? And how much of a benefit am I actually getting? Can I use AI to help me with AI risks?
Yes, absolutely. But first, let me just reflect on one of the things you started that question with. Mm-hmm. You said, you know, we've been talking about AI as a risk. AI has risks, but it is a tremendous opportunity for pretty much every, I just want to be clear about that. You know, the Palo Alto Networks position is not that, you know, AI is risky and therefore shouldn't be adopted. Absolutely. This is transforming industries and it's including cybersecurity, which I'll get to your question in a second, but that's one point I want to make clear. This is, and also this, we get to work on such cool stuff. Like every few years, there's some cool new wave of technology. It's the best. I love it. Anyway, so to answer your question, Drew, let me provide you data point from our own SOC, right? So when we deployed, we're of course customer number one for every single one of our products. And when we deployed Cortex XIM, which is our SIEM-like product, you know, that's built heavily for, you know, the whole notion and the mindset behind this product was, what can we do? You know, the traditional SIEM is very much geared around aiding an analyst. So analyst is going through some investigation, and then they go and, you know, they try to use some automation to aid in that investigation, but it's human first kind of workflow primarily. What we kind of tried to approach that in a different way with Cortex XIM, which is, can we use automation first to take the workload off the analyst and only pull the human in if absolutely necessary? So this is, you know, to your question, Drew. So in our SOC, we see something like 4.6 billion events every single day. What XIM does for us, this has had a really fantastic transformation on our mean time to detect and mean time to respond. They've come down by orders of magnitude inside of our own SOC since we deployed this product. Uh-huh. But of those 4.6 billion, you know, events that we see every single day, are that this automated system with all the AI and ML, you know, kind of built into it, is narrowing that down to 133 incidents that really matter. And of those 133, 125 of them are completely automated. No human ever touches them. Start to finish, investigation, response, everything is handled completely by this automation, leaving just 8 for our SOC analysts. And those are the 8 things that they need to respond to every single day. So that is, I guarantee you go ask, you know, 9 out of 10 SOC teams out there in the industry, and they have nowhere near that. They're trying desperately to respond to like thousands of alerts, trying to figure out, trying to find the noise, the signal inside of the noise. And mm-hmm. It's just like, it's the human is first, and then trying to use these automation tools to make that job easier. But that's fundamentally the wrong way to do it. Use this automation and all this fancy technology to take the human out of it. And the human in our SOC is just responding to those 8 events that really matter, that can't, at this point at least, be automated by our technologies. And so that's the power of this, right? If you have one thing for a SOC analyst to follow up on in a given day in terms of an incident, they can focus on higher value activities elsewhere, but also they can do a much better job at responding to that quickly. You know, I think our mean time to detect is less than a minute. Our mean time to respond is less than 10 minutes now in our own internal SOC. And, you know, those are fantastic, you know, outcomes in terms of better protecting the organization with far fewer resources. And it's all the result of that automation and, you know, some of the advanced technologies you just asked about, Drew.
One thing we've been hearing more about as enterprises grapple with AI is that they start to get an AI project off the ground and they run into the issue of data quality. And in a security environment where I'm dealing with all kinds of data in all kinds of states and formats, I guess if I'm buying into a platform, presumably you've done some of the data science on the back on, in the back end to make it more ingestible and useful to produce good output from an AI. But I'm thinking, in a perfect world, we're still never going to get to everything I have is from one vendor because of acquisitions or cost or whatever. I'm always going to be in a multi-vendor environment. Are there initiatives that you're aware of in the security environment where there's some data science work happening that we can sort of get almost standards on, like what output should look like from security devices so that regardless of, you know, the vendor it came from, it could be used in a larger AI or ML system to help humans automate and respond to things more quickly?
Let me start by saying this, just because Palo Alto Networks is pushing this platformization story because we think it's a better way to achieve outcomes more efficiently in an organization doesn't mean that we are, you know, we have over 1,000 technology integrations into our products, right? So let me start by saying that we have not become some closed system where, you know, you get to use everything that we got or nothing, right? That's a very important point. I mean, you know, the customer still has choice always. Now, Drew, to your question on standards and, you know, I think, you know, standard formatting and the like, I think, unfortunately, I'm not aware of personally, you know, any sort of cross industry initiative to standardize on exactly what you're talking about, for the benefit of the greater good. It's probably not a bad idea. And maybe something we should be, you know, helping to push out there in the industry. You know, of course we have our own, you know, data platforms that we're pulling data into either across customers, you know, anonymized data, of course, or, you know, in our own XIM platform that I talked about before, enabling our customers to pull their own data in from various different data sources. But in terms of some, you know, generalized standard for, you know, for these types of data, I'm not aware of anything that exactly meets the need that you described, Drew.
Okay. So,
okay, Rich, solid conversation. You did not disappoint me with where we went here today. Got into best of breed and that sort of discussion. And then I feel much more clear in my head about how things are different. And it's because of the complexity of security now and the different attack surfaces that are coming. The thing that you said that has stuck in my head now is you don't want to be buying a zillion little point solutions. What you're actually looking for, if you want to be able to keep a handle on things, is a platform that can deliver a new defensive capability if there's something new that comes down the line, rather than, oh, there's something new. Geez, we got to go shopping. You don't want to have to be in that world. Okay, so the thing that we weirdly haven't talked about, even though this was a sponsored show by Palo Alto Networks, is your platform has branding now and so on, so that if people want to go and look at the platform that Palo Alto Networks offers, I haven't said it yet, Rich, but it's Strata, right? Strata Network Security Platform and Strata Cloud Manager.
Absolutely, yeah. Strata Cloud Manager is the management piece that ties everything together and delivers that wonderful simplicity that we've talked about throughout the session here. And the Strata platform overall is, you know, it's what people know us for, our firewalls in, you know, hardware, software, cloud form factors, as well as our SASE solution, all delivered with a, you know, the similar set of capabilities that provide the protections that the organization needs across any use case. And of course, we continue to extend it. In recent years, we've extended to, you know, 5G and mobile security, IoT and OT security, where we've now become a leader. Of course, most recently, AI, which we talked about extensively in today's show. So this is, yep, you know, this is our way of delivering on that promise of the platform to get you the best of breed type efficacy in a much simpler consume and a much more efficient to deploy type of form factor.
Excellent. Strata Network Security Platform, Strata Cloud Manager. We'll have links to those in the show notes. Or, of course, you can just go to Palo Alto Networks and search that up, and those links will come right up for you. That's how I got the links for the show notes. Yeah. All right. So thanks to Rich Campagna for joining us today, for Palo Alto Networks for sponsoring, and thanks to you for listening very much. Palo Alto Networks sponsoring is the way that we feed our families here. So if you found this discussion helpful, would you let your team at Palo Alto Networks know that you heard about it on Palo packet pushers. We would really appreciate that. Visit packetpushers.net for everything that we have to offer for your professional career development, blogs, newsletters, engineering articles, YouTube, and a dozen podcast series designed to help you become a more capable engineer. I've been Ethan Banks, along with Drew Conroy-Murray. Until next week, just remember that too much networking would never be enough.